a shameful, this is like probably my most shameful admission, but I remember, you know, because I've been dating my wife since I was 14. So she was like my only girlfriend. Like, that's it.
Holy
just
cow.
Her, like, it, the same way. We, first boyfriend, first girlfriend. We dated for like 8 years, got married at 22. So when we moved to Charlotte 3 years ago, she had to go down. I think it was like her sister was giving birth or something. So she drove down with my son. And I'm like, babe, I got to work. I have to, you know, I can meet you later. And I'm telling you, dude, those 2 days that I was alone, I think I went like full child, where there was a day I was like, I was bored. I was playing video games. I'm like, man, what am I going to have for dinner? I know what I'm going to have for dinner. I'm going to make a cake. So I went to the grocery store to buy like a cake box to make myself a cake. And then I ended up just making the batter, and the batter just tasted so good from that yellow moist extra cake that I was literally just eating yellow moist batter cake. And then my wife called me, and I was like throwing up, and she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I had cake batter for dinner. Just throwing up. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's my story.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of, well, I feel like deja vu, man. I feel like deja vu. This is our...
It's as if I saw you yesterday.
I know, for real. But today, another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. This is our second attempt because of my crappy internet. So, I got all that fixed, and as soon as I got it fixed, Mark left. He left me. He was like, yeah, I'm not even going to do this. But thankfully, because he decided not to do it, we have a crap ton of news to handle today.
See, that was like prophetic. That's why I did it. I felt something in my DC veins that DC just had something to share.
Oh,
and boy, did they share.
They had plenty to share. So...
I kind of love that all this news is coming, like, after... Well, I mean, you know, like, social media always tends to have their overreactions, and how I think with all that Swamp Thing news with the cancellation, people were pleading for DC to give good news. Now, I would say for comic book fans, this is freaking awesome. Now, for fans who are complaining about Swamp Thing, I don't know how much of it is, you know, comic book fans... Or just people who just love to look at comic booky stuff, but they don't really read the books. So I guess it's kind of like a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Fans of comics, this is a great day.
Man, which book do you want to talk about first? I think that the biggest thing for us as fans of Superman is this possible news that I never thought I would see again. Ever, to be honest. It is... Something out of Newsarama. I don't know if somebody else pitched it to Newsarama or if they found this exclusively under doing a little bit of investigation. But with a little bit of context clues out of Young Justice and Superman,
and very, very subtle too.
Very, very, very subtle. Very subtle. And I believe it's this issue of Superman that we're going to be talking about today is the fact that Ma and Pa possibly are alive. Possibly. Now, this is like, I want to say one thing. Everybody knows that listens to the show how much I basically despise Bendis at the moment. I will say, I have mad respect what he said to Newsarama about how these plans were made before he got to DC. He doesn't want to own it. I appreciate that. Because if he were to say, oh yeah, that was my idea, I would have hated it. No matter if I love Ma and Pa Kent, I would have hated it. I would have been like, no, Bendis, that's somebody else's job.
Oh man,
somebody,
that's awesome.
Somebody else needs to bring them back, not you. But because it was made, because the plans were made before he got on, he owned that and he said, hey, this wasn't my idea. And he didn't even confirm it, but he basically said, hey, situations before I got here were made and decisions were made before I got here, and I'm trying to tell that story. I appreciate that. But Bendis, you're telling it the wrong way. Anyway, let's move on.
Damn, jeez, man. So, yes, with this Ma and Pa Kent news, when I first read it, I was a little, like, I guess you could say, like, thrown back, because Ma and Pa Kent means so much to Clark that it's kind of like, I don't want them to fudge it up.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Now, I will say, I'm not going to go along the lines of what you just so politely said about Bendis, about ruining things, but I will say that it did make me feel a little bit more giddy when he said that you kind of have to see what happens at the end of Doomsday to kind of know what's going on, because that makes me kind of feel that this is a Geoff Johns thing.
Oh, for sure.
And to me, I can kind of see Geoff Johns as somebody who loves Superman. I mean, clearly you could see with all his time, you know, with movie stuff with Donner, he's written action comics with Richard Donner at a time. I think that he has a high level of respect and he loves the Kents. And I think that that's probably something that bothered the hell out of him during New 52, that they kind of eliminated that from him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of really happy if that's the case, because yes, it's a Geoff Johns thing. So that's kind of what is getting me really excited. I am really curious on how they're going to do it. It just kind of confirms again how this continuity, you have no idea what's happening before Doomsday Clock, what's happening after Doomsday Clock, unless somebody kind of like tells you in an interview. But because of these clues that they're saying, oh yeah, just a couple of months ago, you know, like, oh, I was with a farm family and I was in Smallville High School just a couple of months ago. Like, that's what's going on in Young Justice. You're like, whoa. I mean, it's kind of, you know, that stuff kind of confuses things, but
it does confuse things just because we haven't seen Connor in so long, and just because of like continuity and things, we basically assumed that the scene out of Young Justice with Connor in school was something from way back when, and that he's been in Jim World for several years. But if this is what, you know, the context is saying, that it literally is only a few months, then I can understand how he's trying to get that off, and very cleverly saying it without saying it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I do, like I said, I appreciate that kind of stuff. Props to him for, you know, not taking that credit. But talking about some crazy news with, you know, books connecting, this Wally West story we're hearing about, flash forward.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Well, I mean, can we all celebrate, for those who are in the mood of celebrating, that it looks like, based on this amazing news of Flash Forward, which will be Wally West seeking redemption, kind of searching through the cosmos and kind of going over everything that happened during Heroes in Crisis and kind of like finding himself again. It kind of seems like we're not going to be seeing him in the Suicide Squad,
I would
assume it's a good thing.
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, technically, if you're going by Leviathan, there's no more Task 4X. So it's kind of like, you know, because all these kind of, you know, spy stuff, they're all kind of like going down. So I can kind of...
Dude, and not only that, let's just thank the gods that Brett Booth is back at DC making Wally books. That's amazing.
That is really good. I mean, I was surprised considering how vocal he's been. Because Brett Booth is kind of like, you know, Patrick Zercher?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Zercher's another one that's kind of very, like, against it. And I'm like, man, this guy was doing, it was Action Comics, right?
Yeah.
At the beginning of Rebirth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's right, because Gleason was doing Superman with Tomasi. That's right. So yeah, that one got me, and I was like, wow, okay, like, this is cool. I'm a little confuzzled with Scott Lobdell.
Yeah, and I think most people are, just because he did really good with Red Hood and the Outlaws.
And at the start.
At the start. He has kind of, you know, up and down since then, not going to lie. This new take...
Well, it feels like it's gone down ever since Artemis and Bizarro were gone.
Yes, yes.
And they did this, they started this new design and all that kind of crap.
Yeah, this new Red Hood outlaw.
Yeah.
But he, hopefully, because there has been a tease of the return of Artemis and Bizarro, so hopefully he'll get back to some of his good, his better stories with those. But I'm really excited for this Wally West book. Something that Jimmy noticed this morning... the announcement was yesterday, but Jimmy noticed this morning the character that you can kind of see in silhouette in the back of that picture is actually a character that was introduced in Sideways, the New Age of Heroes book. They're like these ultimate beings that are that basically guard the doors for people to go in and out of multiverses.
Yeah, they're kind of like a border patrol.
Yeah. 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 Basically. And their character was very interesting. Unfortunately, Sideways did not, you know, hit it off like everybody thought he was going to. Really cool design. Basically the Spider-Man of DC, but without spider powers. He has these...
Yeah, I think... I mean, I wonder how much of it didn't do good because of... because Dan DiDio was writing it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Say what you want. I think Dan DiDio is a really good writer.
He's a very good creator. I will say that.
Because I would say that his, like, I've thoroughly enjoyed probably every book that he's written. They're always like short lived though.
Yeah.
But for some reason, okay, I'm not going to say like a great writer. He's not a great writer. I don't remember. Did I say great or good?
I can't remember. I think you said, I just think you said that you like his writing.
Okay. Yeah. I don't remember what I said, but. That sometimes that's just the positivity in me. I would say this. I've thoroughly enjoyed everything that he's written. I thought it's really good. So kind of seeing like the Fuginauts.
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah, were they his creation?
I believe so.
Okay. Which kind of makes me feel that, you know, he's going to have a hand in this.
Well, and also, the thing that I feel like is more towards the hate of Didio is we live in a society that's just like, you know, F the people with power. So, like, because Didio is so high up in DC, everybody's just like, oh, he has the power to ruin everything we love. So if anything happens, we're just going to blame him. And that's usually what happens. You know, whether it be with Tom King's Batman, whether it be with... Tom King's Heroes in Crisis, whether it be with Superman, with Bendis, whether it be, you know, anyone with these characters, a lot of people always go to Didio and to blame. Yeah. And is it merited? Probably not, to be completely honest. I just, like I said, I think that a lot of people just go to the one person they think of that has the most power over at DC, and they're like, oh, I hate that guy.
Yeah, I 100% believe that. I think that is totally what's the case. But let's see here, so that we don't get stuck all in the same thing, because man, this week is, and just to let you know, there is a possibility that when we are talking about the comic books, that we're gonna completely just interrupt it, because today is supposedly the day that on the 13th of June, that Bendis is gonna be revealing more about what DC Millennium is. So we don't even know exactly what that is. We've just gotten some teasers with the Legion of Superheroes, with OMAC.
Batman Beyond.
Yeah, Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah, Batman Beyond. I don't know why, but I'm wondering if we're going to get something like Commandy. But like these are kind of like the things that they've been teased. Supposedly it's breaking, so I'm hoping that it happens during this, because then you'll kind of get like a live reaction from us. But yeah, we got the Flash. Let's just do something really quick here. Which is, if you are, since I know that you've mentioned kind of like Bendis, well, it looks like a couple of the books from his imprint, Wonder Comics, Dial H and Wonder Twins, are getting 12 issues. So it looks like they have gotten a really good response, and from it being, I guess, the original six, it looks like they're going to get like that maxi series treatment, which is cool. Because I mean, well, both of us, we've really been enjoying Dial H.
Yeah, Dial H has been a great book. Sam Humphries has done an amazing job on it. I'm grateful that it's going to get the 12 issue miniseries. I have been trade waiting for that one. I got the first issue. I think I got the first two issues. But since I've been just trying to ease back on the spending on single issues, I have gone to the trade waiting aspect of things, and I can't wait to get that as like a, like, cause the one thing that bothers me about some maxi series is that they put them in two volumes and they don't just put it in one. Like one large.
Well, let me just kind of interrupt you here for a second, because I have Clark, who's a part of, I think he's like the main in like public relations for DC, and DC has just announced Legion of Superheroes Millennium with Brian Michael Bendis and Ryan Sook.
Are you looking at that right now?
So yeah, we got here. We have Brian Michael Bendis, Ryan Sook, and as I'm looking at this article right now as we speak, Brian Michael Bendis is rewriting the future of DC Comics and Legion of Superheroes Millennium, a two-part monthly comic that will feature an immortal protagonist moving through various disparate DC futures. Comicbook.com has learned exclusively she will come out the other end on the doorstep of the Legion of Superheroes, leading into a new ongoing series from Bendis and artist Ryan Sook. So it looks like they're going to do that Man of Steel treatment, where you have like a mini leading to the main story. Along the way, Bendis will work with a number of artists who will examine how characters like Commandy, oh there you go, OMAC, and Booster Gold fit into the broader context of the Legion. Among the artists involved will be superstars Jim Lee, Jim Chung, Nicola Scott, and Dustin Nguyen. Per DC, Millennium focuses on a most unlikely tour guide to the 31st century, a familiar face to DC fans who finds herself suddenly immortal. As she learns to cope with her newfound immortality and the reason she was chosen for this quest, her 1,000-year odyssey will connect all of DC's future timelines for the first time. Along the way, she encounters a host of DC heroes from the future, as drawn by some of comics' most popular artists. The first issue will introduce a near-future version of Supergirl, drawn by Jim Lee. Batman, oh my god, that cover looks gorgeous. Beyond.
I have to see this. Hold on.
Oh my gosh. Bro, get with the program, dude. Batman Beyond is drawn by Dustin Nguyen. Commandy is drawn by Andrea Sorrentino. What the fudgesticles? That's amazing. And Tommy Tomorrow, what? Drawn by Andre Lima Araujo. Legion of Superheroes Millennium number 2 will bring Booster Gold, drawn by Nicola Scott. OMAC, drawn by Jim Chung. A DC Offworld chapter drawn by Jeff Jacal. What the f- Doesn't Jeff Jacal only do like covers?
From what I can remember.
Damn. And finally, the Legion of Superheroes drawn by Sook. Bendis joined comicbook.com to discuss Millennium and to tee up what he has planned for the Legion of Superheroes going forward and why he thinks he needs to be around for quite a while. Bro, in your face. Long live Bendis. Now, I'm not going to read the I'm not going to read the interview, because then we're going to be here for a long time. But
for real.
Dude, that was gorgeous. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think this is the cover of Supergirl, man. Yeah, this is going live right now. This is why. Yeah, this is. Man, look at the L. Like, I just, no, that can't be Supergirl. Oh my god, it's like a circular thing. It's like the, it looks like the Legion ring.
That is crazy.
Oh man, this is great. I should be podcasting right now, but I'm tweeting this. Oh man. Okay, sweet. All right, so then, man, is any other news gonna beat this? Well, we'll see. I think so. Because Scott Snyder is introducing the mother bleeping JSA. He is bringing them back. We are finally, the gods, the comic book gods, have finally heard our prayers. And it looks like in Justice League 31 and 32, they're going to be showing up temporarily in these two issues, But Scott Snyder has affirmed has confirmed that he has big plans with the JSA in the future.
For afterward, yeah.
Yes, which is great to hear. And knowing that it's going to be... I'm on a George Jimenez high right now, especially because of Justice League 25. So I'm expecting the greatest panel, like splash page, introducing them of all time.
Oh, man. I want to see, like, that Jay Garrick just being, like, front and center.
Oh, I honestly feel Jay Garrick is going to be featured in issue 32, which is the second part, because it's Howard Porter. So that just screams Flash. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because wasn't Howard Porter the one that did the button? That way, yep. Jay Garrick, I was like, of course it's going to be the Flash on this one.
Yep.
And he drew the amazing sequences of, like, going through the Speed Force. So yeah, I'm like,
he,
yeah.
And he showed Jay Garrick, like, coming out at the very end.
Yeah. Yes. So that is, dude, that's great. I mean, other great news. We have Tom King with Tom King and Clay Mann with their Batman and Catwoman series. They are bringing
the Mask someone. Of the Phantasm. Let me just say, I was in the middle of work when I checked my phone, was I wasn't supposed to, saw this picture of the, the hook,
mm-hmm.
or the Psy glove or whatever, with the reflection of Catwoman and Batman, and I flipped.
Now, do you think it's going to be Andrea Beaumont?
I think it will. I think that Tom King will introduce her as what they were in the movie, a old fling.
Ugh.
And I think that it will almost be like a weird love triangle, but also maybe a revenge story.
Now, and do you think that this is going to be what he meant by changing Batman? You know, like the myth, not like the mythos, but like doing like that huge thing for like generations. Do you think this is something? Because I mean, we're going on like what, 20, 26 years? When was the cartoon? 92, 93? Like 26 years?
Movie came out in theaters in 93.
Yeah.
So it's been 20, well,
yeah,
no.
20, 26 years.
Yeah, 26.
So that's a big deal. And that would have been a crazy way to end his run. If this is what he was planning to end the run. Like you would know more than me. But let's see. What other news do we have here?
Have the Lex Luthor news. I will say even not only on the podcast, but even in real life with just in Slack, I am the Debbie Downer of everything.
Yeah, you suck, man. What's wrong with you?
I saw this, and I immediately made a joke referencing The Batman Who Laughs, which will be the first book that we'll be talking about tonight. But talking about I called him the Lex Luthor Who Frowns. It's going to be it's going to tie into You're the Villain. It's going to be... Jason. Oh my gosh.
Jason Latour.
Latour, yeah. I almost wanted to say Aaron. Whew. Jason Latour.
I mean, he can come to DC.
As long as he doesn't want to bring Thor with him, because that guy can never get away from Thor.
Well, I mean, if he keeps on writing Thor as good as he's doing, then, I mean, he can stay on Thor as long as he wants. But yes, so, he's been on Thor. He's becoming like the Dan Slott with Spidey.
Yes.
But the thing is that Dan Slott's run was all over the place.
Yeah, that's true.
Aaron's just been, like, up there all the time.
It's. But I will say Jason Aaron's has been very linear, and it has been, you know, straightforward. But anyway, I digress. So Jason and Brian Hitch, which we have loved on Hawkman for the past 12 issues. So this story is going to be about bringing Lex Luthor into the multiverse and experimenting with that, and we see that the Lex Luthor that we all know and love, or all know and hate depending on, you know, how you look at it, is dealing with multiple versions of himself, mainly as a kind of saying that, you know, He doesn't really know himself, so he's going to be, you know, interacting with all these different Lex Luthors. He's been through a crazy change.
And he's seen things, and he's seen things.
Yeah, technically this Lex Luthor, if we're talking timeline-wise, is part of the New 52. He has been a hero, a weird hero,
yes.
for the past, I mean, for the first 6 years of the New 52, and then, you know, went into a, like, anti-hero, and then went to straight-up villain with Snyder's run on Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
So, he has been through all walks of life right now, and to really find himself in this book, I think it'll be very interesting. Not necessarily something I asked for. I will still read it. I'm still, you know, Lex Luthor is still a very big part of Superman's life. I believe so, even though they're trying to butt heads between him and Martian Manhunter. So I will very much appreciate this, and I will read it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for Lex Luthor, and Lex Luthor's one of those guys that I love him having his own book, mainly because of before New 52, he took over Action Comics for a while, and it was Paul Cornell who was writing, and I think it was Pete Woods, I think he was doing the art, and I think it was called, like, The Black Ring or something like that, and it was his own story. And it's like one of those things that kind of seeing him doing all the handlings and everything that Lex does between LexCorp and all the big picture stuff, it just felt like you were watching like a Steve Jobs movie, mm-hmm. but you're dealing with Lex Luthor in Metropolis dealing with all the kind of crap that he deals with and all the stuff that he, you know, has planned, like all his little maniacal plans. So that's why, like, something like this where you're having that, like, you know, quote unquote, he's having like an identity crisis pretty much.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned to you, I loved that issue of Justice League between him and Martian Manhunter. And I thought that that was a really cool story. And it kind of makes me feel like, I wonder what's Luthor's end game? Like, what's it going to be at the end? So that's why, even though this is a one shot, I'm cool with it being a one shot, because I think the progression that's been going on with his character, I'm digging it. So, I mean, it's kind of nice seeing evil Lex Luthor again.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
That, you know, that you love to hate.
I love seeing him in the way that I grew up in, just because that's who Lex Luthor has always been for me. Not to say that I didn't like it when he was a hero, but like you said, you know, it was a very on-and-off story. And even with the beginning of Rebirth, it felt like they didn't know what to do with that character. So I am glad to see him go through this, and I'm sure it'll change him, like, dramatically, just because of what's been going on with Year of the Villain so far. In other news, though, we also have the, you know, we talked about the Wally West story spinning out of Heroes in Crisis. We have another book spinning out of Heroes in Crisis as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Harley and Poison Ivy book. This is, it looks like it's only going to be a miniseries, so probably 6 issues. But it looks like they're going to be exploring their relationship after the fact. It'll probably be semi-serious just because it does retain to continuity. One thing that I always said is that it's very hard to take Harley Quinn seriously because her book is technically outside the realm of continuity.
Yeah.
And it is very much a, like, almost like a Deadpool book. So it's really hard to look at something like this and be super excited for it. But I know there's a ton of fans out there for that relationship. So I'm happy for them that they get to have this book.
Yes, for sure. And the last one here, I honestly didn't think we were going to end on this one, which is Steve Orlando and Amanonkai Nalhulpang is doing, that's my version of, is, you did that on purpose because you wanted me to do the creator name because you didn't know how to say it.
Yeah.
I think I nailed it, is doing which is Gotham City Monsters. It was kind of like this book, I think, would have gotten me a little bit more excited if it was kind of like what Comics Dude was mentioning, which is Creature Commandos. That would have been, because you're seeing Frankenstein, you're seeing Killer Croc. Honestly, I didn't even read the article because Steve Orlando doesn't really get me excited for a book. So it's one of those things that are, it's tough for me to get excited about. I'm all for seeing the monsters in DC. Give them to me. I dig it. But it's kind of, you know, Steve honestly hasn't, I'm trying to remember something that I really liked. He did pretty good with his like really minor Wonder Woman run, that little arc that he did, but it's, you know, it's nothing to get me excited about at all.
Yeah. He had a small story in the DC Nuclear Winter. It was a Superman story. Wasn't really excited about that one either. It's just weird. I haven't really read a big Orlando story, so I have nothing to really base.
Night of the Monster Men.
That was Steve Orlando?
Yeah.
Like in Rebirth?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah. Exactly, my friend. And then he's done, he's doing the Martian Manhunter book right now, which is, it's weird. It's a weird book, but it's not bad. But again, it's not worth getting excited about, at least for me.
Yeah.
If you're a Steve Orlando fan, hey, God bless you. Awesome. But
yes,
for me, eh. But with that being said, good Lord, bro, that's a lot of freaking news.
Let's finally get to books.
Okay, we're going to review our comic books. So we're going to review one book. We've talked too much about news. So choose your favorite book.
Oh, okay.
Leviathan? Okay, no, I'm joking.
Oh, yikes. I mean, I have things to say about Leviathan. I have things to say about Superman. I mean, I have things to say about all of our books.
You got things to say about Bendis. God, you're such a hater. You know what? I'm going to make sure that when we have the Comic Book Legion barbecue at my house, I'm going to invite Bendis.
I mean, honestly, if you can get Bendis to go to your house for a barbecue, that's impressive within itself.
Come to Charlotte, Bendis. I'll gladly go. Cuban food and barbecue.
Because here's the thing. I don't want to feel like I'm coming off as an asshole whenever I talk about his books, but like, I would genuinely have a conversation with him and see, I would pick his brain for what he thinks Superman is. I wouldn't like just go on over and talk to him about how shitty his Superman book is. I'd be like, hey, I don't like your book and these are the reasons why. Tell me why you think this is a good idea. And then he would explain it to me and then I would be like, cool. Well, if I don't like it, I'm still not going to read it. And that's a lie because it's Superman and I have to read it and it sucks.
You just sound like a poopy pants. Anyways, The Batman Who Laughs. This is what should have been the final issue of Scott Snyder's miniseries that he's been doing with Jock. But, you know, stuff has just been so crazy. They needed to add an additional issue. And yesterday, when we were talking about this book before the show, before your internet pooped out, was that you were kind of not saying that the book's not good because you're really enjoying the book. But I guess just from everything that you've been reading from Snyder in terms of just crazy, I guess you were expecting a little bit more crazy with this book.
I was expecting a little bit more crazy, but also I feel like there was a lot going on in this entire series with the multiple Batman, with him getting, you know, hit with all this Joker serum stuff, and then with the Grim Knight also showing up. Also, Batman Who Laughs is kind of, you know, messing up all of Gotham. There's a lot of things going on, and I don't think he meshed it very well for, you know, trying to make a conclusion. At least in my mind, that's how.
Right now, it does seem that there's a lot of stuff that needs to be. And I'm assuming maybe that's why they gave him an additional issue. But I would say that what Snyder, kind of like what he did with The Metal, it kind of felt like not everything was, you know, not every question was answered. But the thing with Scott is that he has done with all these events, there's always callbacks and there's always closures in another event that kind of answer that question. The thing is that we kind of know that his story is coming to an end with Batman stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like I can kind of see why you're saying that, because right now it doesn't feel like next issue will complete things. But I mean, honestly, to me, besides all the craziness and pretty much Batman is at the last, I believe it said it was like at his last 5% of humanity before he is completely overtaken by the serum, where he will indeed be pretty much another version and maybe a better version of the Batman Who Laughs. That part was nuts. And just seeing like their standoff was great. Seeing like you kind of felt like Bruce actually had a hand, like a upper hand on the Batman Who Laughs, based on, you know, all this. There's pretty much been leading up to like, I'm doing this so that I can see him, so that I can finally get that, you know, that step ahead. And then you find out that's not even the case. Like, it's the Batman Who Laughs still has, he's still two or three steps ahead of Bruce, which is kind of like, damn, that's nuts. But yeah. I will say this, that the highlight of this book to me really was what happened with James and Jim. James,
the heart to heart that they had.
Yeah, that heart to heart talk and him pretty much going to his dad just saying like, hey, listen, I had the chance to, like, the urge to go back to my ways and I chose not to. And I want you to know that I'm trying and that I, you know, I am changed and I believe that this is working. And you kind of get a hurt Jim, you know, it's kind of like he's at that point where it's, I'm taking it as tough love as like, you ever seen like Beautiful Boy? With Steve Carell?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of doing it one of those things that it's kind of like it comes to a point like all you want to do is help him, but stop giving me hope because I've been heartbroken like too many times. And I think that that's what Jim was trying to do in that moment where she was just saying, no, I've been lied to. I've been betrayed. I've seen what you've done. And he's like, and so you're seeing that and it kind of made me feel like James maybe has been changing because of the way that he responded to it instead of having like a victim mentality and going completely, you know, like why are you against me, why don't you believe me, he's like, no, I get it.
Yeah,
which is like, wow, that was kind of a big move. But then it's the confrontation with James, Jim, and now the Grim Knight, and now it's like the Grim Knight is gonna no longer hold punches in the psychological game. And he's like, we've had these conversations. I've heard what's happened with James. And he pretty much said exactly what James said, what Jim said to James. And it kind of looks like that with all this breaking down, I truly believe that when he was saying, you know, I love you, please don't, you know, and that kind of stuff. I don't think that Jim has lost any love towards his son. But
no,
I
think that, like, one of the cool things that I was really going to bring up is that you know, at one point when Grim Knight is saying all this, you know, James puts down the mask because they're wearing those Batman Beyond type S suits.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, man, he's going to go back to his old ways. He's, you know, going to turn the other cheek and not care what happens to Gordon. But I think it's kind of like a smokescreen, and that in the end, James will actually, you know, be the hero of this story in the sense of where Gordon is. And
which would be really cool.
I think it would also. Really,
yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's unforgivable what he's done, but in a story like this, you kind of always want, even though you don't, I guess in a sense, like, you don't agree with what it is that they're, what they're doing, or, you know, you can't forgive any of these decisions, but it's kind of like, in a way, depending on how you look, you know, you kind of want, like, a redemption, in a way. So I think, like, in some kind of weird, twisted way, that's where this book is, man. But it ended with, again, Batman Bruce, the Bruce that we know, did not get the upper hand. And it looks like the twist is that, I mean,
He was Bruce Wayne, the one that we know, was, you know, the key to everything all along in Batman Who Laughs' plan.
Yes.
So really, really crazy. I can't wait for the ending just because I know that it also ties into the Batman Superman book that, of course, we will probably cover. So it's looking to be really, really cool.
So Hawkman 13, this is, we have a quota, which is whenever Hawkman comes out, we're going to discuss it because we're going to support the hell out of what Hawkman is, because Hawkman has been consistently one of the better books in DC. And
yes,
it's not getting the recognition that it deserves. And this is post Brian Hitch, and welcome Will Conrad to the fold.
Which I really like the art on this book. And let me just say, are you familiar with the Christmas Truce of 1914.
The Christmas... No.
Okay, so a little bit of a history lesson for people who don't know about this. So,
is this like Hawkman related?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
This has everything to do with what was going on in the book in this one issue. Because we see a life of Hawkman. It pretty much explains him dying and then coming back and dying and coming back. But it's really weird because when he starts the book, he starts on this one side of this war, and then he dies, and then he's on the other side of the war. And then he dies again, and he's on the other side of the war. And it's like generations pass. And it shows that because, like, at one part, you see, like, a bird that's flying, and they kill it, and they're like, oh, no need for the, the rations that we have. We're going to eat bird tonight, you know? Yeah. And then, like, years pass, and they're like, oh, man, there's rumors of, you know, animals used to live on this planet, and, you know, they used to kill them and hunt and eat that. And so you're seeing how long this war is really going on.
Yeah, I think from the first war to the second war, it was, like, a span of, like, 19 years.
Yeah.
It was like 498 to 517.
So at the very end of this story, basically, Carter, that we know, he basically is fed up with everything. And he takes one of his rations, and he walks over to the other side, and he presents the ration to this soldier. And it ends up being a female. And I don't know if you recognize that female. It looks a lot like Shiara. And I'm pretty sure that's absolutely what she said. But they actually made a memorial of them. But when presenting the ration, Shiara presented her, like, drink or whatever. And then both sides got up. They went to each other. They started talking. And it became, like, an actual truce. And they learned to live together. This reminded me of a lot about the old story that I was about to tell you that I learned in history class back in middle school or high school. The Christmas Truce of 1914, what ended up happening is two sides of the war were, of course, fighting each other. And there was, like, a no man's land, just like in, you know, the movie Wonder Woman. And one night on Christmas, one side, I forgot who started it, but one side started singing a Christmas song, and the other side recognized it. They started singing it in their language, and so they quickly realized, hey, we're all human beings, and we know, you know, that on this holiday it's a little bit more important to be peaceful and things like that. So they actually dropped their guns, they got onto the no man's land, they shook hands, they ate food together, they drank together, they actually played a game of soccer together. And it was a phenomenal thing, but as soon as the sun started to rise, they went back to their respectful spots and then started shooting at each other again.
Well.
Yeah.
Damn.
So it was very reminiscent of what this story was. I immediately saw it whenever he started to get up and, like, presented his food. I thought it was really, really cool. Venditti has been doing a great job on this book, and I absolutely love it.
No, absolutely. This book has been really, really strong, and luckily I've been you know, I follow Tim from Hawkworld, and he kind of gives you an idea of the status of Hawkman, and it's unfortunate to see how the sales are declining on this book, because, man, it's really, really good, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's really unfortunate, but. Let's do here, because I'm going to talk about a book here that I was kind of, I guess you could say, really disappointed by, which was Detective Comics 1005. I did not like how this, and this is something, honestly, I mean, besides the beautiful B cover by Cedric, that was gorgeous. Like, that was just sexy. I don't know. I found that this battle between, like, this confrontation was really, like, anticlimactic. I was like, oh, okay. And honestly, this is sometimes something that I get a lot by Tomasi, that Tomasi has really strong beginnings and he kind of paints a really cool picture, but most of the conclusions of his arcs, they usually feel disappointing to me. And I feel like this is one of those where, sure, you know, they're getting the upper hand, they're fighting and everything. You get a little bit of the of them fighting each other, the dialogue where Bruce is kind of saying, well, you know, talk to your dad, and you can see that I'm not, all you saw was the weapon, but you didn't see who threw it and stuff like that. And then it kind of felt like a little bit of a Finn versus Captain Phasma. Like, oh, let's just, but I mean, Finn didn't fall down like Phasma did, but this is like they just both fell down and, you know, she was knocked out, and that was pretty much it. And I'm like,
yeah. And I will say, like, it felt like a full story, but it felt rushed at the same time.
Yes.
So, and of course, you know, because of how popular the character is and what a good response it had, we saw that at the very end of this book, when the Arkham Knight was captured, the driver of the vehicle was actually one of her minions, and so she will be back. It is very clear that she will be back.
Yeah.
Hopefully with a better conclusion, but I do agree. It was a little bit anticlimactic. It wasn't a book, because I told you, like, I read it last minute. It wasn't really huge on my radar because of the books that came out this week. So, overall, I still love the art. Brad Walker is still really, really cool. I love what the visuals that he has. But...
like, I'll be honest. Like, I'll be happy when Walker's gone. Like, I thought. I mean, I know that you're in love with the way that he does his eyes, but I don't know. I'll say I liked Walker better on Aquaman at the start of Rebirth than I like him here.
I can agree with that. Okay, yeah. I can give you that one.
Yeah, but again, that's usually the way I am when I'm with like artists. Sometimes when I look at a picture and I see their work, I kind of like, I'm like, dude, I can only really see this person with your art. So sometimes that's a me thing. But like something that also kind of bothered, I'm like, you know, you get, Bruce is getting his, you know, his ass handed to him when they're meeting the Arkham Knight. And now the dude's literally blind and he's able to defeat.
Yeah,
things that I'm like, come on, man. Like, I get it. Batman's a badass, but this guy was freaking messed up. And now he's coming in and he's blind, and this guy is...
Do you remember the story in Superman where he was blind because of the situation?
Yeah, the Black Void? The Void?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You telling me that Superman, who has heightened senses because of his superpowers, that he can be disoriented being blind, but Superman can't? No, I mean, but Batman can't?
Well, it's Batman. Like, he must have had prep time.
Oh my gosh. Stop.
Yeah, no. So whatever. At least we're getting a tease with later on that it looks like the Spectre is going to be jumping in, so I'm curious to see and happy to see what goes on there. But let's jump into, cuz you have thoughts, you have opinions. And I'm going to leave this up to you because it's really entertaining hearing you talk about Bendis. So, would you rather do Superman, or would you prefer to do Leviathan?
You know what? Let's do Superman first. Let's do Superman.
Okay.
So Superman. here's the thing. High level thoughts. You know, we're a little bit short on time, so I'm going to do high level thoughts. Superman had, I mean, Bendis had great moments in this book at the wrong time.
Okay.
I enjoyed the fact that Superman was appreciating the fact that, you know, the L family was all in one spot. But Superman does not fight in the middle of space, in the middle of a galactic war, and be like, let me just ponder the thoughts here real quick. Oh, look, there's Kara. Oh, look, she's so awesome punching that guy. Oh, and look, and there's Krypto and John. And they're just enjoying themselves.
Now, to be honest...
Oh, look, and there's Zod coming after me and about to punch me.
That's everywhere. That's everywhere in comics. Like, that's... like, we loved Action Comics Rebirth. And this is Clark literally holding a subway. And he's talking, holding a subway, like, from collapsing the ground. And he's talking to this other clone Superman, Clark Kent, like, who the hell are you? While pretty much fighting Doomsday with one hand. And he's having a regular conversation. Like, that's a very comic booky thing. Like, I think you're really nitpicking because your distaste towards Bendis. Because that's everywhere in comics.
What? I don't know. I just felt like this one was way, like, there was way too many things going on. Like, from what we are seeing from Rogol Zar is, like, borderline Doomsday.
Yes.
That is teamed up with Zod. There's no way, if I was Superman, that I'd be like, okay, let's relax here. Kara's here. John's here. Crypto's here. Oh, my dad's here. This is a fun little get together, you know?
I don't see it as exactly what you're such an exaggerator. I would say that's a nitpick that I have towards every comic book that I've ever read, that I can't stand that people are literally fighting and they're giving their thesis. Like, that's every comic, and I hate that. Like, they're fighting and they're telling them their plan. Yes, and then I will. And the reason why I did this is because you were not looking. Like, that's all the time. So seeing here, I don't know. But he even said, I don't know. He kind of, this was like in the middle of a battle. He kind of just turned and he was like, wow, I kind of needed to see that. So I think that, you know, no matter what, if you are fighting, I mean, look at Aquaman. What did you think of Aquaman?
What do you mean?
Like the movie. Did you like the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that Aquaman and Mera kiss, everyone's celebrating the kiss, and there's literally a massacre behind them. But, like, no one, everybody just talks about, oh, God, that better win the MTV Movie Awards for the greatest kiss ever. Dude, there's people getting freaking chopped up in half. There are water dinosaurs eating, you know. You know what I mean? Like, that just happens all the time, and It's one of the, like, Batman and Dark Knight Rises fighting Bane. Everyone's fighting in this huge, you know, the, I was going to say Woodstock. That's not what it's called. Oh, God. I just finished watching The Big Short, too. Man, what's that thing called, though? Where people, Wall Street, where they're, like, fighting in front of Wall Street, and all of them are fighting, and Batman's just standing there, and they're just looking at Bane. No, but I'm going to stop you. Like, no, you would have thought he would have at least gotten elbowed in the back of the head.
True, true. And like I said, I also liked the moment where, you know, they all embrace each other. And
yeah.
Jor-El is like just in the corner being all depressed because he's like, oh, nobody loves me. Oh, no. But like, once again, just because Bendis has already said it in two issues before that nobody can hear each other in space, so he makes up this random thing where Superman and Zod are in the space between spaces so they can hear each other. I'm sorry. That is all sorts of crap. All sorts of crap.
I mean, but that's so comic booky, though.
No. Like, I
dude, we're literally talking about Aquaman and people talk underwater. All in Aquaman, the entire comic should just be. That was Aquaman and Mera saying how much they love each other.
That's believable because of their situation. But
what situation?
Because they are in Atlantis.
What's believable is that maybe more the breathing. That kind of like how Volko said it when they drowned, a lot of people died, but those who didn't, they were able to develop maybe kind of like a gill-like where they can separate water and oxygen. That maybe. Okay, I can kind of give you that one. But there's no reason for blah, 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 blah. It's freaking water, bro. Water's going to go in your mouth if you want it or not. So
I don't know.
I'm telling you, what you're doing with Bendis is what I do with Kate.
It's very bothersome. And then also, I don't like that Bendis brought Marvel technology into DC.
Okay, educate me on that one.
Sliding technology.
I don't read much Marvel, so you gotta.
Okay, so he says here that John's new suit has the teleportation slide in it.
Okay,
sliding teleportation is the same thing that Cable uses to travel in and out of the future. And to the past.
Oh, okay.
So that just like, he could have named it anything else, but because it's a slide, just like how Marvel uses, it really bothered me.
Maybe he's just trolling Liefeld.
Still bothers me. Still bothers me.
Okay, that one, okay. Maybe if, like, something like that. But I'm saying the other, one feels total comic booky, which is the stairs. Now, that bothers me on everything, but I've just accepted it in every single comic book that I've read.
But I will admit that I liked the moments that he put in here. I just felt that they were at the wrong time.
Well, I also don't feel like Superman really felt like, you know, he had like the slow motion music when people are running in the beach in a movie and they're going to hug. I don't think it was like that when he saw Crypto and like Jonathan. I think it was just those moments of kind of just seeing it. And I think Clark, since he has that heightened speed and stuff like that, you know, you never know in what kind of way was he experiencing that. But I get it. It's okay. Yeah. And now, geez, man, that's such nitpicky. Golly.
But
it's all right. I forgive you.
I will say I have not so nice things to say about Leviathan.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Let's end on Event Leviathan. So let's just really quickly jump on Year One Flash. Or Flash, okay. Yeah, Flash Year One. So okay. this was Chapter 3, because honestly, not much happens here. This is kind of like now we're getting to experience Barry. You know, he realized he had powers. The first one, you had the accident. He met the future version of himself. He gets back, and it looks like what he saw in the future is now starting to become his present. And this is now going to be the first time that I guess he's going to be superhero against Turtle. And it didn't. It pretty much went the way that you would expect a hero that doesn't know his powers and the full, you know, pretty much everything that he has in his arsenal, and he's going up against a veteran. He got, you know, he got his ass whooped, which is understandable. Which was really cool. You're seeing some cool moments. I mean, the art. I thought the art again looks gorgeous. I love the way that Howard Porter, you know, does this, works with the Flash. It's something about the way that he works within. How he implements the speed in his art that I think is just gorgeous. After that, you're getting some really cool moments that I think were needed between Iris and Barry, because you kind of know where Barry and Iris, where their relationship is right now in current time, that it's kind of nice to see when they were just kind of like in that flirty, you know, that little flirty mess that they're in. And it's kind of like here that you can clearly tell they both like each other. They just don't know how to. Well, I think it's more Barry doesn't know how to approach it, because Iris is a little bit more straightforward. So it's kind of nice to see the fun parts about him. And then, honestly, I mean, it was just nice to see the rogues, kind of like where they started, because it felt very damage control-esque, kind of like in Homecoming in Spider-Man. And I'm really curious to see how they get introduced in it. But honestly, the issues 1 and 2 to me were better. But this one did have a lot better, I guess you could say, like little character moments with characters that we're seeing at least now in the present time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's what made this issue special, besides being just gorgeous to look at.
Yeah, and I love this this page where Barry is like stopping all the bullets and stuff. Like you said, how Porter implements the speed and the mirages of Flash in multiple places at once. Really, really cool. Love the art. A little confused at the ending, though, just because it didn't look like he got shot, but like the end splash page like has blood all over the place. So a little confused as of what happened, but I'm sure they'll explain everything in the next issue.
Yeah, because, I mean, you did see Snart. I mean, like, he was, like, shooting. So you are kind of curious how that could be. So what I'm guessing is that out of all those times, like, you know, again, he doesn't know the full extent of his speed. So it looks like even till then, he wasn't careful enough and he did take one.
Yeah.
And he took one, you know, to the chest or something. So now I think that that's going to be a way to introduce his, probably like his healing factor.
Probably. Yeah.
So that might be a little bit more, and, you know, they can kind of give kind of like the new readers an idea of how he heals. So that will be it'll be interesting, but so far, man, it's Year One's been a breath of fresh air, because Flashman was struggling for a long time.
Oh my gosh.
At least to me. Like I just couldn't get into what happened ever since the end of like Flash Wars. I was like, oh my gosh, what is he doing with all these like mini arcs with the rogues? But they're just weird, and I don't know. I didn't like it. And I'm one person that has, I mean, at least with Nation of Nerds, I have said that I do not like at all the whole Sage Forth and the Still Force and turning the Speed Force into like an emotional spectrum. I don't like that. I liked it with Green Lantern. And then I felt that even at the end, Johns was getting a little out of hand with it because, you know, this is untapped market. We can just do so many things. I'm like, all right, let's chill on that. So now them kind of adding it here, I'm like, I wasn't too fond of it, but I just really want to know what you're thinking of Event Leviathan.
So.
Wait, have you at least changed on your thoughts with Alex Maleev?
I have changed if he was on a Batman solo book.
What do you mean it would change like, if he was on a Batman?
Like, if he wasn't involved in other... Like, the more I look at it, the more I like it. I will say that. The more I look at it, the more I like it. I think he would be best in a solo Batman book. Okay. Or, you know, I kind of like his design for Green Arrow, but... Because of how Bendis wrote him, it's hard to look past that and just look at the art. So I would appreciate if he was on a Detective Batman or Green Arrow story. I really genuinely do.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see how he is on the Superman Batman book that we're getting in August. So that'll be interesting.
I'm really, that teaser that we got with him and Clark and Jim and Batman on the roof. I'm really curious to see how he draws Superman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
So, high-level thoughts again. Bendis does not know any of these characters.
Okay.
Like he knows the character that he has created, which is this red-hooded, masked Leviathan character.
Mm-hmm.
So that encounter with this red-headed woman... That is the only conversation that makes sense in this entire book.
I think that's on purpose, though.
So, you think that it's normal for Green Arrow to look at Batman and tell him to shush, nerd?
Okay. I mean, if you're going specifically that, because you said the whole book did not make sense. Now you're...
It doesn't. It doesn't make sense whatsoever.
Okay.
Because...
Now, yes, hearing Green Arrow say shush, nerd... Hearing it said like that, yes, it's really weird. But I mean, Oliver does say a lot of corny things all the time, but not to that extent. Not to that extent. Because he's witty.
He's witty. But here's the thing. Green Arrow loves to get on Batman's nerves.
Yes.
I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to say it on like in the middle of a crime scene when things are trying to be figured out, he's not going to do that stuff.
Yes.
He does it when things are starting to calm down and, you know, cuz he knows, "Hey, I need to release some tension here. Let's say this." And, you know, that's just how Green Arrow is. But the interaction with Lois Lane and Batman in the beginning of this book, they've never met each other.
Well,
that's from what it looks.
Well, the thing is that I think that right now nobody knows anything. You have from Jimmy, from when he went into that cult thing, he couldn't even trust Lois with the news that he heard. I don't even think he can trust Clark with the news because everything that they've been seeing and that's been going on, you don't know who to trust. You don't know who is Leviathan. Like
I understand that, but like even still, like. Well, if I can't trust Batman, I'm going to act like I don't even know him? Or Batman's going to be like, "Hey, I don't trust Lois. I'm going to pretend she's somebody else that I don't know."
See, like, I'm taking it more as... Usually when I'm reading a book, if I'm reading the book and I'm kind of confused, there's differences between I'm like, okay, has something else happened in another book that maybe I just didn't read continuity-wise? Or am I reading the book and it's kind of like when you read the first issue of Heroes in Crisis a lot of people were saying that Batman didn't feel like Batman, Superman didn't feel like Superman, and I'm like, well, I mean, if you think about it, if Superman's flying to see what's going on, and all he sees is a cornfield of blood, and he's seeing a murder scene, you're not going to hear people speaking like they normally do. I would hope to think that you're acting a little bit uncharacteristically in a form like this.
Well, here, yeah, you're being cautious.
I think it's just that since this is a number one, I think that he's keeping his, you know, everything that he's trying to do very close to the chest. Where, yes, I'm with you. It was confusing. Because at first, when I first read it, I was like, okay. I'm like, man, why are they kind of talking to each other like this? But it's really until I saw the reveal of Steve Trevor. And then you saw what happened later on with, like, Dr. Strand. That literally Leviathan is creating these moments where they're just eviscerating all these people. And they're pretty much saving like one person, and for that one person to pretty much witness this death, and it kind of paints the picture, how is it possible that everybody died except you? And now it's kind of like making it seem like that's why he even mentions like, I'm Leviathan. And I think like you even got a Steve Trevor, this dude's been like in war. This guy has seen stuff, and he's here sitting in the rubble. And he's just completely, like, there's just certain things that you see and it breaks you.
Well, yeah, I understand that aspect of it. But because he's Steve Trevor, because he has seen things, and because he's, you know, worked alongside all these heroes, I wouldn't think that he'd be just like, oh God, I'm Leviathan, you're Leviathan, everybody's Leviathan, I have to kill somebody. Like, what?
No, I mean, again, sometimes it's like, I think it's hard for us to picture, I guess maybe because it's comic books, or that, like, these dudes are human. Like, sooner or later, no one is above this border of where they're going to, yes, it's not continuity, but even Clark lost Lois and he became crazy in Injustice. You know, like, I feel like there is a little bit of that in there where, you know, there is, a threshold for everybody. So could it be that something like this was a threshold for Steve Trevor? And then considering Steve Trevor is blaming people and Lois is like, no, that's not him. And, you know, he's just suspicious. I mean, he's probably traumatized because he's like, listen, I'm thinking it's this person who's doing it and you're straight up just defending the person. No, like, why? Like, this happened, Clark's gone, you're the closest person to him. Look at Sam Lane, look at Clark. No, Lois, you clearly have something. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's just like paranoia. And I think that that's what the book was trying to do. Now, maybe, I'm not saying the book was perfect, because I don't want to read a book and be confused. Like, that's weird. Like, hey, I just read a book, I spent, whatever, $5, but I don't know what the is happening. But if I'm kind of like looking at it again, I guess, because of the stakes, I can kind of see why it would be like this, because nobody knows what the hell's going on. So that's what I'm kind of doing it like that everybody is just in a sort, because there's a huge, this is just a cluster bleep and no one knows what the hell's going on. Now, later on, I think once things are revealed and you're still getting characterizations like this, then okay, I get it. But I will agree, seeing how the Leviathan special, you're seeing Lois and Clark kind of talking, and she's pretty much telling what happened to Clark. And, you know, she's like, hey, he got kidnapped, blah, and he investigated everything. And then you're seeing this interaction and it's kind of different. You're like, okay, that's weird. I get that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
that's why I'm thinking that it must have been something where, I mean, Batman, I mean, I don't know. I think he's just probably still just trying to process all this, that he's not trying to give anybody anything, because he doesn't want to show himself as being vulnerable, maybe.
Which is weird, because, you know, like we had said before, you know, we know these characters for who they are and what they've done in the past, and Batman has always been a guy that has always been cool and collected. I mean, until most recently in this whole, you know, Bane situation.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, it just, he, for me, Batman just wouldn't be completely out of the blue with every single person that he interacts with. And also, I think it was very silly for Bendis to make it to where Task Force X or the government in general, like, keeps an eye on Batman's every single creation and then just counters it automatically. Like, that was silly.
Yeah, that was a little... I think that those are one of those things just to kind of, you know, when you just want to do something ridiculous. And now it's like, oh, Batman, you know, I think that that's kind of like one of those easy... Because then you would think that the government would be a lot more powerful than what they actually, you know, they're shown as.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been expecting already government, you know, bat wings and stuff. So I don't really buy that. But those are one of those things that I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then I just, I brush it off and I just keep reading. But yes, I agree that that was kind of, but dude, I need the question, man. Like, I will say this, Bendis has been really doing some really cool things with the question, though. I love the mystery behind him.
Yeah, he shows up very briefly in here, just showing that he is kind of watching Green Arrow, Batman, and Lois kind of talk things out, and then he just runs off.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what Bendis has planned for him.
Liar.
I'm interested to see, because the question overall, even without Bendis, has always been a very ominous character.
Mm-hmm.
So is he going to have a large involvement in this, or is he going to be that looming character and then show up at the very end kind of thing? Like that. You know? That's what I'm more interested in.
Yeah, I hear you. So yes, I'm not saying it's a great comic. I won't say that at all. Like, if anything, I would give it like a 7 out of 10. Like, if I was giving it like a number. Maybe the way I speak, I probably make things look like they're better than what they are. But that's not my intention. It's just, I don't know. It's the way I speak. But I can kind of understand why maybe the book, and maybe that's not what his intentions were at all. And then, okay, man, this was a really crappy book. Yeah, but man, look at that, man. We did news. I think we did news and we reviewed like 5 or 6 books and we did less than what we've normally done. So
kudos, that is crazy.
Kudos to us.
For real.
Yeah, see, it only took 13 episodes for us to get pretty good. but yeah, man, with that being said, Clay, where can they find you, dude?
So everybody can find me either on my own podcast... on Fanboy Comics, that of course is going to be here in the network of Comic Book Legion, Nation of Nerds. But we have our own Twitter for that show, Fanboy Comics Pod, and then of course my handle is Fanboy Clay. You can also follow us with Comic Book Legion being CB_Legion, and of course the website comicbooklegion.com, where we have awesome reviews, as well as we're getting video content from contributors such as Kelly One Shot and Juice Wayne, famously from YouTube, has been helping contribute as well. I'm going to be actually posting a video sometime today or tomorrow, dealing with some Batman news, so that'll be awesome, with Juice Wayne's videos. Where can they find you, Mark?
Well, you can find me at Mark Reads Comics. You can also find me at where Clay and I, we both share the CB_Legion, the Comic Book Legion Twitter handle. So if you want to get a hold of me, you can do it in either one of those. Yeah, you can also email us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com. If you are interested in contributing, just go ahead and just shoot us over a message, either one of us, and we'll love to kind of share those details and what we got to do in the future to get you part of the team. Besides that, do you have any teases in regards to your podcast? Like what you got going on with a Fanboy?
I have an interview with Jason Inman, which I actually have to record an apology. Because I was not prepared for that show, and you can very well hear it when I'm talking. So that'll be coming up next. I have a episode with Jordan Funky from the Suicide Squad cast, talking about one of the coolest X-Men ever, Nightcrawler.
Okay.
And then today I'm actually recording with two contributors of the website, with Jake and Blake.
Oh, wasn't that yesterday?
No, unfortunately, we had to reschedule Jake's recording for
today. That's because you wanted to watch Breaking Bad. That's on you. That's on you, man.
Yeah, yeah, that is on me.
Well, hey, Breaking Bad's a good show, though.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah. What season are you on?
I'm on season 3,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
So I'm almost done.
Nice,
so.
Nice. All right, good deal, man. Well, that's it for the news. I mean, unless we should check DC Comic Twitter, because good Lord. For all we
know, for real.
Yeah, all we know is, I don't know, we probably have like 10 more books that we haven't even seen. But with that, to keep the show at under an hour 20, we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.
All right, see ya.